Here, Angie Stone joining us now. She is a brain longevity specialist. You may want to share this segment, by the way, with a lot of other individuals. You'll have the ability to do that a little bit later tonight, right off of the website, rushtoreason.com. But welcome, Angie. How are you today?
Hello, John. I am doing well. How about you today?
I'm very well. I've been looking forward to this, by the way. And for those of you that are out there listening, Susan Cott, a really great friend of mine. We have her on a routine basis for mental health and care and all those things regarding oral cancer and the like. You two are good friends, and that's how we got connected. So, Angie, thank you, by the way, for reaching out to me through Susan.
Of course, and thank you for the opportunity to chat about this this topic today. I appreciate it.
You're very welcome. And this is I was talking to Al Smith, our financial person I was just mentioning a moment ago, and Al and I were just sort of talking, and he always asked me, who's coming up on Health and Wellness Wednesday? And I said, well, we've got somebody on as a brain longevity specialist. We're going to talk a little bit about dementia, Alzheimer's, things along those lines. And Angie, I know that I think it's a large topic for a lot of people and families, because this particular area affects a lot of individuals, especially here in America. Am I correct in saying it that way?
Yes, I think that the statistics are somewhere around 6 million people in the United States have a diagnosis of Alzheimer's disease. Someone every, 53 seconds is diagnosed.
Wow.
And as you said, it doesn't only affect the person that has the diagnosis. It's like you think about family members that are affected and all of the unpaid caregivers, and
right.
It just goes on and on.
Well, and yeah. I'm not saying this to be cruel in any way, Angie. So, and you, again, if I say something I shouldn't or I'm out of line, please correct me. But
okay.
I've been around enough individuals, and I had a grandmother that passed away from dementia and Alzheimer's. And that was back when they really hadn't defined Alzheimer's like we have today. So it was kind of in the early days of really kind of figuring out even what all of that was. And what I do know is it, in fact, affects family members, I would say, far more on just the whole mental health and everything they have to do that's involving that individual. I mean, again, I'm not trying to be cruel, but the person with the disease, in a lot of cases, doesn't even know they have it.
Right. And I've just gone through this. My father passed away after a battle. He passed away on April 25th this year. He's our generation three.
Okay.
In our family, and his sister. And so exactly what you're saying, and it's true, and it may seem crude, but I'm telling you that my father didn't really understand what was even going on.
Right.
And the burden.
The burden's on everybody else around them, right?
Yeah. You're just so distraught, because there's not the first thing that you can do to make them better.
That's right. Thank you. And so, again, I'm not trying to be cruel at all, and I'm not saying it in that way, but really, the realistic side of this, unlike other diseases, where I had a brother who passed away from brain cancer a couple of years ago, Angie, and in that case, he knew full well what was going on and what was happening, and even all the way to the very end, he knew full well everything happening around him. When you get dementia or Alzheimer's, you yourself really have no idea of what's going on. That's the problem. You don't have any idea of what's going on around you. That burden falls on everybody else then.
Yeah, and we think of, our families. If there's nothing, if there's not a good reason to try and keep your brain healthy on your own, there's nothing more powerful than, oh my gosh, I've been through this with my parent. I don't want my children to go through this with me, right? So it is, it's all-consuming, and a lot of people try and keep their loved ones at home with them through the disease, and it's awful.
It really is. No, and again, experiencing some of this and being around this myself, I'm not an expert like you. I'm a car guy. That's my car guy, radio guy. That's my expertise. I am not an expert on the medical side of things. We do this hour each week just because I feel, I guess, Angie, just personally, I just feel like this health and wellness topic, we take an hour out of each week outside of politics and daily events and all the other things that go on in the world. We take an hour out and talk about this because, to me, this is really the nucleus of what we have going on. If we can't stay healthy, and it's like the oxygen mask coming out of the airplane, if we ourselves aren't healthy, how are we going to help those around us?
Absolutely. And sadly enough, and I'm speaking from experience, it's like we let ourselves go while we're focusing on everybody else.
Good point.
Right?
Good point.
And then we end up sick, and then, like you said, it's like I can't take care of anyone else if I'm not well.
That's right. Okay, so along those lines, and we've got all sorts of different walks of life out there listening to us right now. Young, old, some may even have individuals in their family that are experiencing the very same thing that we're talking about. I mean, we have a large gamut and a multi-state listening audience that's hearing us right now. What are some of the initial steps that, okay, I'm 58, I'm very healthy, I'm very active, I feel my brain, my wife might argue, but for the most part, I think my brain does pretty well on a daily basis. What do I do to keep myself in check moving forward?
Well, there's a lot of things that we can do, and that's the good news, right? Many times when we talk to, you know, our medical personnel, they're like, oh, there's nothing you can do, and that is false.
Yeah, if there's anything I've learned by doing this hour interviewing folks like yourself, Angie, yes, that is false.
Yeah, that is completely false. And so there's a lot of things, right? But let's just hit on a few things.
Okay.
The first and foremost is in my realm, I would say one of the biggest pieces of this is sleep.
Okay.
Okay. I'm not talking about people are like, oh yeah, well, you know, I'm getting, you know, 7 to 8 hours of sleep a night. It's like, yeah, that's good. That's a good starting point. But it goes deeper than that. We have to understand what the quality of our sleep is. There's a lot of things that happen in our brain when we sleep. And so if we're not getting enough sleep, if we're not cycling through the sleep cycles appropriately, if we have any breathing called desaturations where your oxygenation drops, if we're having any of those things happening or we're not doing those things, that's when we get into trouble with our brain. Our brain cleanses itself during sleep.
Okay.
It doesn't cleanse itself while we're awake so much. There's a system called the glymphatic system that is kind of like a program that's running in the background at a very low rate. But during our deep sleep, that's when the glymphatic system is cleaning up all the toxins and things out of the brain.
Okay.
So if we're never getting to deep sleep, there's an issue.
Okay.
That's
now,
one thing with sleep.
Okay. So everything you just said, again, being sort of a mechanical guy that I am and coming from the auto world, everything you just said, I'm now digesting that saying, okay, I've got to get really good sleep. That particular system, that glymphatic system, is doing the cleansing during the night. I guess you could say almost like filtering the things going on in your brain, like the oil in your car would be filtered by an oil filter, similar situation, I'm guessing. I also know that the better I take care of my vehicle, the more proper maintenance, the better fuel I use, etc., the less toxins I'm even putting into the engine and the less work that has to be done with the oil filter itself. Is the same true for the glymphatic system? In other words, if I'm putting better things into my body, do I have less cleanup at night?
Absolutely. And so we think about all of the toxins that we come in contact with, whether it's our environment, whether it's what we're eating, whether it's the things that we drink. The more stuff that we're putting in, like you said, and to gunk up the system, the harder the system has to work. So it just makes complete sense to be doing things that are cleaner for us, if you will.
Okay.
And the other thing I was going to mention, after sleep, the next thing that I would say is we have got to ditch the sugar.
Yep.
Sugar is toxic.
It's the enemy, right?
It's the enemy,
well,
and our country has put it into everything.
Yep, it has.
To make us like it better, to make us want more of it.
It's a drug.
Talk for an hour.
It's a drug, Angie. And I also know from having family members with cancer in the past, my brother being one of those, as I mentioned earlier, and I know this for a fact, one of the very, very first things they do when you have cancer is no sugar. It's gone. It's out.
Absolutely.
Because it's contributing to what's going on, right?
Yes, sir.
Yep.
Yes.
So that alone, I mean, when I found that out and I learned that, I'm like, okay, that right there tells you that it's just not good for. And to your point, I don't know the numbers, I should have this in front of me. I've talked about this many, many times in the past, but the amount of sugar, you know, especially refined sugar that we as Americans consume on average, not saying all of us listening are that way, but on average, the number is astronomical, isn't it?
It is. It is. And we really have a huge crisis in this country with this whole sugar thing, and it's got to stop. If we want to have our health, that's one of the biggest things that we just need to nix.
Okay, I just looked it up because I knew the number was high. I had to know because I'm kind of one of those data kind of guys. The average American consumes more than 100 pounds of sugar per person per year.
And I wonder what that statistic is in Europe.
I'm guessing way less than that. Well, I know for a fact it's way less than that just because of how they do things.
Asian countries, how much sugar are they eating?
It's way less. And to your point, Angie, and this is a whole nother, I could go off on a tangent for hours. I won't, you know, because your time is limited and I want to respect your time. But the reality is we did some things as a country. We had a food pyramid that I think was completely out of whack. We did so many things that were not correct because of lobbying and all sorts of other things that happened that, again, I won't go down those rabbit holes. But the reality is we have been telling people for far too long the wrong things to eat.
Agreed.
How do we fix that, by the way?
You know, I really think that the onus is on ourselves.
Agree.
We do not have a healthcare system in this country.
No, we have crisis care.
We have crisis care. And unfortunately, any type of preventive care.
It's shunned. You know, Angie, we saw that through COVID. Crisis care is where we're at. We shunned even preventative care. We should have been running PSAs all the way through COVID talking about these are the things you need to do to keep your immune system happy and fend off COVID if, in fact, you get it. We don't need to shut things down. You don't need these injections. We don't need to do the things that you're doing. You don't need to be on a ventilator. These are the things necessary to keep yourself going. We did none of that.
None. And we don't do it in many of our health. I mean, we just don't get those
things. We don't do it. No, we preach all sorts of other things that not saying they're not healthy, but we preach going to the gym and doing this and doing that. And not against any of those, Angie, not saying those are bad things. But if your core, if what you're putting into your body is not correct. I know so many people that go to the gym and work out so they can have ice cream later that night. Well, you just defeated the purpose of going to the gym.
Exactly. Yeah. So really, the responsibility is on ourselves.
Okay.
Yeah, because our system is never going to be looking out for our best interest, in my opinion.
Agree.
And so we have to be smart if we want to remain healthy. We have to be looking at these things, and we have to be weighing what we learn, and then decide for ourselves. What is the path that we want to be on? Do we want to be on a path where we're doing what we can to remain healthy? Or do we just want to throw caution to the wind and do whatever we want and hope that our brains don't get Alzheimer's?
Okay, I'm going to take a break. Before I do, though, I want to ask you a question as soon as we come back, so I'll let you think about this before we go, and that is, do certain genetics, DNA and that end of things, have an impact upon whether or not you end up with dementia and Alzheimer's? I'm going to leave it at that. We'll come back and talk about that in a moment. Again, Angie Stone is with us. Her website, by the way, is AngieStoneRDH. Make sure I say that right. It's AngieStoneRDH.com. We'll have links, by the way, up on the website a little later tonight to all of these as well. She's got a 4-step process on the website that we'll get to in a moment as well. So don't go anywhere. We'll come right back.
You're listening to Rush to Reason, brought to you by Absolute Electrical Plumbing, Heating, and Air.
All right, we are back. Angie Stone with us again. She is a brain longevity specialist, and we've already learned sleep is a big deal. Good quality sleep, by the way. Quality food, we'll get into that in a minute as well, Angie, and kind of further that along. On top of that, I asked you before going to break if genetics plays any part in this as well. Does it?
It does.
Okay.
It does. What we need to understand, though, is that I'll explain a specific gene that we can talk about.
Okay.
But I want people to understand that even people without what I'm going to talk about can get Alzheimer's disease. But what we need to be aware of is, again, what are our risks?
Okay.
And so having this particular gene, it's called the APOE gene. It's easier than the whole big name, right? APOE. And attached to the APO gene, we get one from our mom, one from our dad, right? That's how genes work.
Okay.
And the gene comes with a number attached from each parent. So you can have an APOE2, an APOE3, or an APOE4. from your mom and your dad, and then you get a combination of numbers, right, because you have two numbers. So okay. Where the interesting part comes in is if a person has an APOE 4 or if they have two 4s. So if they've received a 4 from their mom and their dad, that is pretty problematic with risk. And 1-4 is a higher risk as well.
Okay, so either a 4, a 44, or a 1-4.
Or so you could have a combination of, let's say, a 2-2, a 2-3, a 3-2, a 2-4, a 3-4, right? Mm. So what you're looking for is if you have a 4 with another number or if you have two 4s.
I see.
Okay. I have a 4. Yeah, I'm a 3-4.
Okay, so having that 4 in general is not good, is what you're saying.
You know, it increases your risk.
Okay.
And so does it mean like, oh my gosh, because I have a 4, I'm going to get Alzheimer's disease? Absolutely not. Does not mean that. What it does, it increases my risk by about 30%.
Which means all the things we've already talked about, you would be, I'm just applying common sense here. If you've got one of those genes, then what you and I have already talked about, sleep and food, and we'll get into more of that as well, then I probably want to put that high on my list, right?
Absolutely.
I mean, you want to do that anyways, but especially if you've got that marker, you definitely want to be more cognizant of that.
And if you have family history, that increases your risk. If you're a female, it increases your risk.
Hmm.
So these are all what I call non-modifiable risk factors, or I refer them as to bullets in my chamber.
Okay.
And so what I want to do is I want to keep those bullets in the chamber and not get them turned on or let them out, right? Because we can keep genes, genetic sequences, turned off by what we do, okay? So I want to try and keep the APOE4 turned off.
And by the way, you can tell, we're going to have you back. So much information here to divulge, which is fine. You've been a great guest. We'll have you back. I promise you that. We'll just do that. So with everything I know that's happened through COVID and the mRNA shots and what we're doing with genes and proteins and things along those lines, you're speaking English because we've already learned through all of that. You can turn things on and off, right?
Absolutely. And it's by the choices that we make every day. And the bad choices start to add up and add up and add up over time, right? So we know that our brain changes are starting 20 to 30 years before the first sign of any type of dementia symptoms.
Wow.
So it's like we have
I'm sounding bewildered. It's like I interview a lot of different people during this hour. I've never heard that.
Yeah. And you can look it up. It's in the research.
Wow.
And so
amazing.
We've got to be getting to our younger people. And, you know, we have to figure out what is their risk. What are these daily insults? I mean, so, you know, are we drinking for our entire life and nothing shows up until later? Are we sleep deprived? Do we have jobs that our entire life that we're being sleep deprived? I mean, there's a time when women are sleep deprived when they're raising children.
Yes, yes.
You know, and so really trying to figure those pieces out so that we can do the best we can. I know if we've got babies waking up in the night, someone has to tend to them.
Yes.
And
yes.
Maybe it's a higher importance to really take turns if you have, you know, someone that can help you with that baby so that you're not getting all of the sleep deprivation, right?
Because let's share that responsibility.
To our brain.
Yeah, common sense would say let's share that responsibility. I know, I understand. Sometimes just the family life even and schedules and so on, that may not work. But that responsibility needs to be changed. Okay, dumb question on my part. What do we do to get tested to know if we have these genes or not? Where does that come from?
Well, this is something that people do not like to tell people. It is a simple blood test. It is not expensive. And you are able to, 23andMe, also through a cheek swab. If 23andMe...
It's funny you said that. I just went there to see what mine is.
Yeah. If you did the whole, the whole test, there's like a... There's a smaller test and a bigger test.
Yeah.
You will know.
Okay.
If you took the bigger, it will tell you if you have 1 or 2 4s, but it won't tell you what the other number is.
Ah.
If you have a blood draw, you'll know what your numbers are.
Okay.
And doctors tend to say, oh, well, you don't want to have that test.
Stop. Why do they say that?
Yeah, I was just going to get there. A lot of the people, my clients that I work with, when they go to their doctors and they ask, they're like, oh, you don't want that test. And I always coach my clients. I'm like, no, you ask them why I don't want it. And their answer is because it will really mess with you. It will mess with your, you know, your mind, and you'll be all stressed out because you have this
That's
gene.
The dumbest thing I've ever heard.
Like, I know. And so I coach my clients to be like, no, you work for me. I want the blood draw. And yeah. A lot of doctors will say, oh, it's so expensive. No, it isn't.
Interesting.
And so we have to be able to stick up for ourselves. And if someone wants to know, they have a right to know. Like
Agreed.
My little brother, he will never know. He will never, he does not want to find out because he won't change anything and he will worry.
Mm. Interesting.
And so he gets that choice.
See, I'm going to use the car analogy again. I go back to what I do. We have a car show we do on Saturdays. We help people with, you know, just really keeping their vehicle on the road as long as possible. It saves them money at the end of the day. Now, Angie, I know that there are certain makes of and models of vehicles, certain years even, that require different types of maintenance based upon what we know historically that vehicle has problems with. This is no different than what you're talking about. So if I know ahead of time, if I do these steps, I'm liable to not have the same problem with that car that my neighbor might have with theirs. Why would I not take those steps?
Exactly. That is my train of thought. And to me, knowledge is power.
Exactly. Take the words out of my mouth. I say that every single Saturday when we go through our car show end of things. Knowledge is power. The more knowledge on your vehicle you have, the more power you have, and the more money you'll save in the end. In this case, it's power on your health side.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, we talk all about heart health and, you know, risk for heart attacks and risk for this and risk for that. I'm here to tell you, John, that I work in memory cares, and those people who are there with Alzheimer's disease, the last thing that they would choose to have right now is a healthy heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Because they're ready to go. They don't. Who wants to live in that situation?
Yeah.
So the brain, in my mind, you start at the top. You take care of the brain, and what's good for the brain is good for everything else. And so, our brain is what makes us human.
Mm-hmm.
You know, every single thought, every single movement we make, every single thing that we do starts in our brain.
Agree.
And we don't take
agree.
It, we don't take it seriously.
Okay, going back to the food side, we talked about, you know, eating quality food, no sugar. I'm sure there's an entire list. In fact, we'll have you back to even talk about more of those things. What are other are there foods people can be eating if they have these traits to help them fend off dementia and Alzheimer's down the road?
You know, there is, and if you'd like, I have a list of just like basic 10 lists that I could send to you and you could put up with the show notes if you want.
I would love to.
But blueberries are really good for our brains. Nuts are good for our brains. And here's where it becomes confusing, because when you research like a brain healthy diet, there's several. You know, a lot of people tout the Mediterranean diet. A lot of people are touting the Mind diet. And there is something called Keto Flex. And then there's some people that are touting the keto diet. I think that what we need to understand is more of precision medicine and precision eating, if you will, because everybody is wired differently. And what's good for me isn't good for my husband.
Good
you know,
point.
My husband is a diabetic. And so I'm not a diabetic, right?
Right.
So my food choices
are going to be different.
Need to be different.
Right.
Right. And
right.
So just to say, oh, well, everybody needs to eat this way. It's like, no, I need to understand me and my body's needs and what makes me feel the best. And so, again, I wish that there was just something that we could say, oh, go eat some carrots. You're going to be fine.
I'll use myself as an example, Angie. I'm an individual, and I have to watch my weight all the time. I used to weigh a lot more than I do now, 100 pounds. I lost 100 pounds back in 2010, so I understand a lot of the eating things and so on. And through that process, learned personally for me, what can I eat and what can I not eat? I'm a carb guy. I love carbs, but they don't love me. I mean, that is one of those things where I just look at them and I can gain weight. But I'm also a guy that I don't have the lactose intolerant side that a lot of folks do. I can eat some milk and cheese and frankly not have any stomach issues, not have it bother me, not have it bother all the other things that can affect other individuals. And by the way, I typically don't pick up weight from eating dairy products. Now, they're high in fat. Typically, that would be a big deal for most people, but it's not for me. But a piece of bread, that's a killer for me.
Yeah, It's knowing our bodies. And actually, if we're cutting out fat out of our diets, we are harming our brains because our brain is the fattiest organ in the body, and our brain needs some fat. And so I think about, you know, I was younger when all that whole no fat craze was, right?
Yep, me too.
Eating no fat, nothing.
Yes.
No fat, everything. And it's like I think about what did we do to our brains during that period of time, and could that be leading to some of the increase, you know, at this point in time,
good
because
point.
We were all eating no fat.
Good point. Yeah, like, fat, bad, fat, bad, fat, bad. That's all we heard when we were, when, at least when I was younger, that's all we ever heard. Fat, bad, fat, bad, fat, bad. Oh, but go have the cereal.
Exactly.
I mean, again, I go back to what I said earlier, Angie. We, you know, governmentally, societal-wise, we have just gone off the rails, and we get on these gimmicks, I call them. I hate to say it that way, but and I know in some cases they work for certain people, but I know for a fact from doing this program, you know, this hour, you can't be on keto your whole life. You can't be on Atkins your whole life. You can't be, I mean, you've got to have things well balanced, and to your point, know your own body and what works and what doesn't, because it's not a one-size-fits-all.
It's not. And it's like with a big gluten, you know, oh, everybody wants to be gluten-free. I get that there are some people who can't handle gluten.
Correct.
That's for real.
Correct.
Right?
Yes, I do.
And
yes, that's
I
correct.
I don't think that every person on the face of the planet needs to be gluten-free.
We went for thousands of years with everybody eating it. I realize it was not refined and it wasn't what it is today. And I get that. And I'm also a big fan of you're going to have it. Yes, do the whole grains. Do the things that are more natural. That's true, I think, with any foods we would eat, Angie. But I, like you, I don't think it affects everybody the way everyone thinks. Yes, some sections of the population, it's a very, very big deal. And they have a disease. And I'm not getting into all of that because that's a whole other conversation for another day. But I think some people steer away from some things just because they've heard that that might affect them. Well, does it or doesn't it?
Right. Yeah. And we just really don't know unless we're, you know, we're educating ourselves and we're paying attention to what makes us feel good. Maybe we're having some food sensitivity testing done, which is more, you know, a more accurate way to look at things.
Yep.
Now they've even got, you know, that you can take a cheek swab and understand what is best for your body.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's all of these things that are available to us.
Tools.
Tools. And there you go. I mean, we just have to be paying attention if this is a priority to us.
Well, and what I'm saying, and again, why I do this hour every week, it is, to me, as you can tell, a priority. I feel like it needs to be a priority to everyone else, because again, I look at if, you know, if we want to go out in all of these other areas of life and quote unquote change the world, you can't change it if you don't feel well yourself. You can't pass on a legacy to your kids even if you don't feel well yourself. I mean, all of these things are very, very important. And again, being around some individuals that have had Alzheimer's, I can also tell you that personally, Angie, I don't want to end up there, not because of me. It's not a selfish reason. I don't want to be there because of my family.
Correct.
It's not
correct.
Selfish. I'm actually, it's like estate planning. I want to do what's best for them, not what's worst for them.
Exactly. I'm 100% with you. We have a 15-month-old grandbaby, our first grandchild.
Congratulations.
You know, I know. Thank you. And I just would really like to see him grow up, and I don't want him to have a grandma who doesn't know him.
Yeah, amen. And, you know, again, you've got a lot of things on your website. Again, all of you listening, we'll have that up on our website a little bit later where you can go there. And there's even a, you know, way you can book a discovery call with Angie, all sorts of things that you can do from the website itself. And again, there's a 4-step process in really figuring out where are you at in all of this. And Angie, I'm going to say this as well. Even if you don't have that marker, even if you don't have a high risk, eating well and doing the things necessary to live a healthy life is not a bad thing, period.
Not a bad gig. If you can age well and have your longevity so that you are able to do the things that you want to do until the day you leave this world, what better gift is there than that?
Exactly. Exactly. So need to watch these things. And again, Angie, to your point, I would say that people early on need to have these tests done, figure out where they're at. How could this? And again, none of it's a guarantee. Just because, as you said, just because that marker's there doesn't mean you're going to be that person. And you can still do a lot of things to help fend that off. We just have to be educated and learn that. And by the way, that's why you've joined us. And again, we will have you back. To me, this is, as you can tell, this is a really, really big topic. This, I'm going to make a factual statement. This affects a ton of families that are out there listening right now. And this is important stuff, in my opinion.
Thank you. I couldn't agree. Couldn't agree more.
Well, Angie, again, thank you so much. Susan, if you're listening, thank you for introducing us. This has been fabulous. And I will say this, Susan, again, if you are listening, Angie, I can tell you this straight up. If Susan recommends I talk to someone, that's an automatic endorsement in my book. That's the relationship her and I have.
Well, I have to give a shout out to Susan as well. She and I were discussing, you know, what I'm doing and what she's doing. And I'm like, I just, you know, this needs to get to more people.
Yes.
This message, because we're not getting it.
Nope.
And just raising awareness and giving people, you know, hope that they yep. can keep their brains healthy.
You know, I leave it at that. Giving people hope is really what this is all about. Again, Angie, thank you so much. We will be in contact with one another. Continue to send me things. I'll get that up on the website. We'll have you back here. Honestly, try to get you back every 4 to 6 weeks. This is really, really good stuff. I want to get this out into people's hands, into their brains. And I know that not everybody can listen to us exactly the same time every week. So the more we have you on, the more information we'll get out to folks.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, John.
You're very welcome, Angie. Thank you very much. Have a great evening. Fabulous, folks. And again, you can do some of these tests, whether it be through 23andMe, a blood test, however you want to do it. There's ways for you to determine if you have some of these markers. If you have the marker, it's not a guarantee you're going to get it, but it does mean that you should be aware of it and maybe do some things differently as you live life.
This is John Rush from Rush to Reason and Drive Radio. Thank you so much for listening. Check out more of our podcasts at rushtoreason.com or drive-radio.com.